Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube, Phil's Recap and Review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to our PAX East 2018 one-on-one special. On this annual edition of our interview series, I had the opportunity to sit down with 11 talented developers and publishers that were at this year's annual Boston event. We've got legends like 3D Realms, Suda51, and NIS America, as well as some great up-and-comers like Another Indie, Headbang Club, and Zom Studio. We also chat with our good buddy, some Nerds Clothing, who are showing off some new designs featuring some of your favorite WWE wrestlers. So let's not waste any more time as we press start on our PAX East 2018 one-on-one special. Beginning of PAX East 2018, and I am in the Intercreates booth, and I'm with Matt Papa from Intercreates. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Doing all right, man. Running on 3 hours of sleep, but doing good.
Ditto. I am in the same boat as you. So you're here at Intercreates. You're showing off two games. First and foremost, you're showing off Dragon Marked for Death, and you were telling me that this actually reunites people from Mega Man Zero.
Yes, it does. So we a lot of the mainstays on the Dragon team are guys from who, you know, main programmers, characters, artists, you directors, producers, you name it, guys who were on the Mega Man Zero team back in the day at Intercreates, and we got a lot of this talent, some of which we haven't worked with since those days, back together working on this project. So it's really, really exciting.
So what can you tell us about Dragon Marked for Death? What's the premise?
So Dragon Marked for Death is a like dark fantasy style action RPG. You can play with up to four people, either locally or online multiplayer. There's four distinct different characters you can play as, each with their own strengths and weaknesses. And as you get more people together, the game gets more and more and more fun.
Right, because it's not like one of those games where four people, it becomes easier, it becomes more challenging, and that's what I like about multiplayer games.
Yeah, it doesn't go from like super duper duper hard to cakewalk, you know, it adjusts accordingly.
So, like, can you tell us a little bit about the game's modes that are going to be featured in Dragon Marked for Death?
Well, we can't give out too much yet because the game's still under development, but, you know, it has a very deep story, you know, that you'll be able to get dozens of hours of enjoyment out of, so it's not like a quickie and you're done. There's a lot of content packed into this game.
That sounds really awesome. Now, the other game that you're showing off is a title that I actually have at the moment. I'll be reviewing it on the Electric Sisterhood page, Gal Gun 2. And apparently, you are the one responsible for bringing this franchise to America.
Yes. When I joined Intercreates, we were in the process of... Double Piece was still in development when I joined Intercreates. And I pushed super hard internally for a Western release of this game because at first there was absolutely no plans to do so. And I pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed, and then I was finally able to convince them when Double Piece came out in Japan, I put out a tweet to our English fan base. I was like, hey, would you guys like to see Galgun in the West someday? And people went ballistic. And I showed them like all this like data and stuff from like Twitter analytics, the whole nine yards. And I was like, see, I wasn't kidding, man. Like, there is a real demand for this. I'm like, oh, well then, we should talk about this more. And then That's all she wrote, and now we're on our second Western release for this series.
Well, as our readers will know, that I actually gave 4.5 stars to Galaga and Double Peace, and number 8 on our top video games of 2016, actually beating out King of Fighters 13.
I love this. I love it. And King of Fighters is a really good game, but
I'm very happy for the honor. Yeah, but let me tell you, because I feel like this reinvents the whole rail shooter genre, man. Not since, like, Revolution X or, like, Terminator 2, the arcade game.
Oh, my God.
Like, you're talking too old school here.
Oh, yeah,
this
brought
back my love of the rail shooters.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, the rail shooters is sadly pretty much a dead genre for the most part, so it's really nice to be able to give people who, like, be into, like, anime games like this, but who love, like, the rail shooters, and vice versa. I know people who've come to love rail shooters because of Galaga. They love anime games, like, wow, rail shooters are fun, and now, in your case, vice versa, you know?
Absolutely.
Really cool.
So, what's new in Galaga 2?
You want the short answer or the long answer? There's a
we
lot
got
new
time,
in
dude.
I mean, there's a lot new in the game. I mean, the reason we gave it the number 2 is because we feel like it's a different step in the direction. You know, Double Peace was very similar to the original Galaga game.
In terms of
how the mechanics of the game worked and stuff like that. So Galaga 2 is a very new way to do the game. You know, instead of being on a full rail this time, you kind of go from, like, point A to B to C to D, and you kind of actually get to enjoy your surroundings a bit more, because you can, you know, once you're finished in that little area, you can, you know, look around, do whatever you want to do before you move to the next point.
Not to mention that it'll help you find hidden things that might be in the background.
Yes, exactly. There's a new, in addition to your standard pheromone shot that's been present through all the games, you have the Demon Sweeper item now, which is your trusty little sidearm that can, it creates a vacuum tornado that can suck up the little mini demons that are causing trouble all around the academy. When the girls, like, shout the words at you, you can suck those up too, and maybe other stuff that you might accidentally suck up and create breezes.
Right.
That's all just a coincidence.
Accidentally,
yes, it is a pure coincidence. Pure coincidence. Just the way you do missions in this game, it's whereas, like, Double Peace and the original more of, like, a visual novel format.
Yeah.
This one kind of, it doesn't feel quite as visual novel-y this time around.
Right. Don't get me wrong, because I love the visual novel.
Oh, yeah, I do too. It's a lot more of a branching path that you kind of decide what missions and what things you're going to do during the day. Because instead of Double Peace, like, which was a single, everything was packed into one day, Galaga 2 is over the course of 20 days.
Okay, so you don't have, so you've got 20 days,
right,
or
you're
else
not,
you don't.
Yeah, you're not, like, shot by an angel who screwed up. She's more like coming to you for help this time.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a different scenario all around.
Now, does this mean we'll see, you know, multiple endings? Will you be able to get with various other girls like you could in Double Peace?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're just like all Galagas previously, there are multiple different endings depending on what you do and how you interact with the characters, so you got a whole lot of different endings to look forward to.
So, for our listeners, I want you to please tell them why they should play Galaga 2 and why they should wait for Dragon Marked for Death.
Dragon Marked for Death, we'll start with Dragon Marked for Death. Dragon is right in the wheelhouse of games that we love to create. 2D side-scrolling action games with absolutely awesome pixel art. That's like our bread and butter. That's what we're known for. And Dragon is going to be a lot of our games are very single-player oriented, and Dragon's going to blow that open with a super immersive multiplayer experience that I can assure you is an absolute blast, especially when you get the whole gang together.
Nice.
Galaga 2, you know, on the surface, you know, people are like, oh, this is like, you know, like it's one of those weird, sexy anime games. And sure, you know, there are, you know, that's like a small part of the whole pie, you know?
Right, I mean, you think you go in there for a laugh, but then you realize, oh, damn, like, this is actually,
like,
really fun.
Like, the shooting mechanics are fun, and it's a challenge, too. It's not a cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination. You know, it's a very immersive story with very lovable characters, you know. Galaga has a lot of personality, because even, like, you know, there's, like, the main heroines and, like, the angel characters, stuff like that, but every single girl you meet in the academy has their own distinct personality that, and you get to interact with those characters, both, you know, sub-characters and main characters more than ever before. So you get to really know the girls in this game, and I think that's one of the biggest changes in Galaga 2, not to mention just all the different gameplay mechanics. It's the way you progress through the story. There's a lot to look forward to. For Galaga fans, you're going to get a fresh, new experience with Galaga 2.
Matt, thank you so
much for joining me here on Boston Bash. We get Galgun 2 available on April 24th on PS4 and Nintendo Switch, and Dragon Mark for Dead coming to the Switch and what other consoles?
Right now, we just got Nintendo Switch coming out later this year.
Excellent. Matt, thank you once again, and from the bottom of my heart, thank you for bringing this beautiful, beautiful franchise over to America.
It's my pleasure.
It has been scientifically proven that the only thing to stop a zombie apocalypse is the power of heavy metal. And I am here with Guillaume from Headbang Club, who is showing off their latest title, Double Kick Heroes. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
Oh, yeah, thanks. I'm fine. Hello to everybody. to all metal heads out there. We're making a game about killing zombies in rhythm with heavy metal music. Mm-hmm. So the game is called Double Kick Heroes. It will come out on Steam Early Access next week on April 11th for PC and Mac. So the game is all about killing zombies. You have you have to follow the drum partition, and you have on the beginning you have two buttons. You have to choose between the upper gun or the lower gun when a kick comes to the fret of the drum. So zombies are coming after you, so you have to be aware of what's going on the road and you have to follow the rhythm, of course.
So before we dive deeper into the video game, I would love to know more about Headbang Club. Like, how did you guys get your start?
Oh, yeah. Everything started. We did a game jam, the Ludum Dare, in December 2015. Sorry. The team was two buttons, so we came up with a mashup between a rhythm game and a shooting game. And we had a great response from the audience. We had a great feedback. We were first in audio and 15 in the overall. So we saw the potential of the game, and we decided to create the studio Headbang Club to do a full game and release it on Steam. It's been 2 years and a half of hard work.
Terrific. Now, before we dove into this game, what's neat about Double Kick Heroes is that you can play this game in any way possible. You can actually, you know, use the mouse and keyboard, or you can use a controller, or you could actually use a Guitar Hero or Rock Band controller.
Yeah, yeah. If it's a device recognized by the PC with a USB plug, you can play with it and enjoy killing zombies the way you want.
Now, what's also really cool about this game is that there's a custom mode where you can actually create your own levels with your own music. So, hypothetically, I could actually dive into my metal folder, pull out some Sabaton, some Rammstein, some Judas Priest, and create my own levels with that music.
Exactly. You just have to own the song, and now you can build the level, share it with your friend, or if you're not confident in building the level, you can takes the level of another player. It works with the Steam Workshop, so it's good. And one more thing that I didn't mention earlier, we have also signed partnership with a metal band to add extra tracks directly in the game. So you will have a ton of hours of gameplay to enjoy.
Terrific. And can you tell me a little bit about the metal bands that you actually have featured on this video game of Double Kick Heroes?
We have a metal band called Gorod, which do pretty intense music. We have Anteus, we have Hell in Town, we have also a French metal band called Ultra Vomit.
Nice!
It's totally crazy. They're incredible guys. No, we will bring some more as the game continue on its development.
Terrific. And now, if you're looking for another really great French metal band, I need to give you the suggestion of Rise of the North Star. They are a thrash metal band that sings about anime and manga.
Okay. We'll check definitely that out. You know, it's kind of difficult to sing with metal band because they have labels and we have to deal with every... You can't just contact the group and say, hey, give us your song, yeah? That's a lot of paper to fill. So, yeah, we will bring some more metal in our game.
So... You guys are launching this in early access next week. My final question would be, why should everybody dive into Double Kick Heroes?
Oh, if you like rhythm game and metal song, this game is made for you. But, we want everyone to enjoy the game. So it's for the rhythm hardcore gamer, but there is five level of difficulties. So everyone can enjoy killing zombies while listening to heavy metal. So, if you like retro, it's a game made in pixel art, so if you dig the 90s arcade cabinet, this golden era when you push a coin in the arcade and enjoy the trip, I think you will like this game.
Yeah, and when I play today, it seems like a blast. And for our listeners, hopefully soon, we will also have a full review of Double Kick Heroes soon afterwards. So thank you so much for joining me here on Boss Fast Speed, and best of luck with the rest of PAX East.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Folks, growing up, I played tons of games from 3D Realms and Apogee Software, which was the name of 3D Realms beforehand. And I'm here with the founder, Scott Miller, who is showing off their latest title, Iron Maiden. Thank you so much for joining me here on B3. How are you doing today?
Glad to be here, and we're off to a great start today.
So tell us a little bit about Iron Maiden.
Well, we found it in a hard drive back in 1997. I'm just kidding. But we're using the same build engine that we used for Duke Nukem 3D, Shadow Warrior. And really, there's about 10 games that came out back in the mid to late 90s using this engine. Witch Haven, we licensed the engine out, Blood. The engine's been sitting in cobwebs for a long time. And, retro games have been kind of making a comeback. And we thought, we like these games. We should probably do one ourselves. And, a light went off above our heads. It was like, why not dig out our old build game, our build engine, and make a very authentic retro game using our original engine? And this project got kicked off about 18 months ago. We found a lot of really great developers who are very experienced in sort of like the mod community and building features for Duke Nukem 3D and these original games. We helped form a team, gave them one of our IPs that we really want to grow into something bigger, and it worked out that we've got a pretty cool game on our hand that actually exceeds my expectations. It just really captures that nostalgic spirit that was so prevalent in games in the 1990s.
Absolutely.
And the graphics have become a style upon their own.
Yep.
The fun factor's there, the gameplay's there, non-linear environments, tons of secrets, and just the fast pace of the game. It just really feels like you've stepped back in the time machine and gone back into the 90s.
And you talk a lot about secrets. That's what I was really surprised about, like diving into Iron Maiden and playing the prologue level. There's like almost dozens upon dozens of secrets in each little area to find, whether it's in a vent or a little secret compartment. It's so much it's so cool seeing like all this like retro styled like hidden gems that you don't really normally find in video games these days.
Yeah, I mean the problem with games like Call of Duty and the other triple or quadruple A games is that building these secrets where you actually like go deep into areas and jumping on platforms and finding whole new rooms and stuff. These are very expensive assets. It probably costs several $1 million to make a single level of like a Call of Duty.
Right.
We're not spending anywhere close to that for the whole game, for our game. And so the thing is that these levels are not that expensive to make, like quadruple A levels, and therefore we can afford to make them non-linear and have lots of like really cool secrets where you have to go down hallways or jump over things or whatever, and we put in a pop culture in there like we did back in the Duke days, and so it's really a lot of fun.
And on top of that, because you're using such an old school engine, you're able to build games that are as big and vast as the AAA titles, but only on a fraction of a budget.
It's just amazing. I mean, this game, it's not even, it costs us in the catering budget for most games, It's really, but you know what? The people behind it are so passionate, now that we've released the game a few weeks ago on Steam, and we have like a 98% overwhelming positive review score from people who are playing it, it's really energized the developers to even put more, effort into it. It's like, oh my God, we really kind of touched a nerve here, and there's definitely a market for this kind of game, and so, the effort's really being put into what's going to eventually be released, in a few months, the final version of the game. I think it's going to really shine.
And I do think so, too. I mean, that's what I love about this title, I Mean, and it's the fact that it's got this retro vibe, but it still feels like something fresh, something new, something that we don't really have in this current generation of, console gaming, or PC gaming, Mac gaming, wherever you want to look. And that's what I love most about Iron Maiden, is the fact that it captures the spirit, the essence, the vibe, the gameplay mechanics, everything that made these first-person shooters from the 1990s so great.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, there's no recharging health, there's no, cover fire or any of that kind of stuff. It's just straight-ahead gunplay, and it's fast-paced, and it really, it's like, what's old is new again, we haven't seen this kind of gameplay in a long time, and even though it was born in the 90s, it kind of got replaced by whatever came, the Halo and Gears of War and all these games, and suddenly it's like a wide open market for this kind of game, and new blood's doing some of this too, and wouldn't surprise me if other developers go, well, damn, that's really a fun game, and it's not that hard to make nowadays,
exactly.
With the tools and stuff we have nowadays, it's not like, back in the day, it took us 2 years to make Build, from scratch. We were always, in competition with id Software at the time. Gotta make better features to outdo them, and we're always trying to leapfrog each other and stuff, and we're not in that kind of technology race anymore. We just can focus on gameplay.
Right. I mean, because there's really no more competition anymore. It's more about, let's just bring forth an experience that everybody can enjoy.
No, you're right. I mean, so.
Yeah. So, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about the story of Iron Maiden.
Well, it actually stars a female protagonist that we first came up with back in 1997 or 98.
Oh, wow.
We actually had an internal game project that... Well, I was going to star a female player, hero, and I think the internal name we were going with at the time was Bitch for the name of the game. And back in those days, it was all about controversy.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I wasn't that much of a fan of that name, and so I was trying to think of a better name. And I remember I was watching the movie Barbed Wire with Pamela Anderson that came
right.
out. And I'm thinking, that's kind of a cool name, Barbed Wire. And I'm looking at I'm watching the credits scroll by at the end of the game, end of the movie, and I see, a female bombshell played by this, like a bombshell. And I went and registered the name. I thought, that could be a name for a character.
Right.
And, then we kind of built a story around her, and we were going to actually use her in a Duke Nukem game, Duke Nukem Forever. Like, in the very early trailers for Duke Nukem Forever, back in 1999 in E3, we actually had a model for Bombshell, and she appeared in the Duke Nukem trailer.
Wow.
And, but... when we ended up selling the Duke Nukem property to the Gearbox several years ago, we carved out Bombshell because we thought, let's keep her for ourselves and see if we can't do something in the future. Because Bombshell wouldn't be her like her nickname. She'd be like a military, like explosive expert. And, you know, it was always my wish to really make an IP around her. And things kind of got screwed up when we came out with a game called Bombshell a couple years ago, because there was like a lawsuit with Gearbox. And we originally wanted that game to be like a top-down Duke Nukem game, but Gearbox got involved and we couldn't do it.
Right.
So we just kind of stuck Bombshell in there as a last-minute, like, you know, what else can we do? And the game didn't turn out that well. The hope all along was to have her first appear in a true 3D game. And so she's finally getting, you know, sort of the game that she deserves, in my opinion. And, I expect there to be sequels. I expect this character to be around for a while.
I can absolutely see a franchise coming from the Bombshell character. I mean, she's got the look, she's got the attitude. It's got this sort of, like I said, it's got this vibe that we don't really see in gaming these days. I mean, you got your badass characters, but you don't see many badass female protagonists these days.
Right, and, you know, we really kind of went out of our way not to, like, over, like, sexualize her. You know, she doesn't have, you know, what Lara Croft had back in the 1990s.
Right.
You know, and all that kind of stuff. And, but yeah, in any case, you know, bottom line is you still got to make a fun game. And you know, that was our number one goal with this project. You know, get it right down, you know, I can't even think of the phrase anymore, but the main thing is, you know, focus on gameplay, not have too much of a story bogging things down, you know, stick to what works, you know, good guns, good weapons, good enemies, all, you know, good levels, level design, and you know, we went back to our sort of 1990s way of designing levels, kind of mazy, not linear, some key cards, you know, discovering things, health packs, and, you know, it seems like people seem to be really digging it.
And I dig it too. I mean, just playing this one level alone, it just brought back the memories of what I used to play, like the old school Duke Nukem 3D and Wolfenstein 3D and Doom and all these other classic games. So it's just so cool to see something like this come to us once again, like almost, 20 years later. And you guys should really be proud of this character of Bombshell, of Iron Maiden, that you have brought to the gaming industry, to the people. I personally cannot wait to see what sort of massive, mayhem-filled adventure that we're going to see with Iron Maiden.
That's really awesome. And here's like a funny thing to think about. If we would have done this 10 years ago, it probably would have flopped. Because, you know, back then, even 10 years ago, it was still more about, you know, graphics and stuff. But, you know, we live in an age when Minecraft is the biggest game ever.
Right.
And yet, nothing about the graphics there. And I feel like people see this game now and they think, they totally get over the fact that, yeah, the graphics are from, you know, the 90s, but it's a style upon its own now. It's like, it's its own aesthetic.
Pretty much,
people are no longer married to the idea of I've got to be playing the game with the best engine anymore. You know, so
I've been reviewing games for 10 years. Once upon a time ago, maybe graphics played a big role, but not anymore.
Yeah.
It's really about the experience that a game gives you. Sometimes it can be about the story. Sometimes it's just about the fun factor a story or a game can give you. And I feel like that's what you're going to be getting with Iron Maiden.
Well, thanks so much for saying so.
You're welcome. So for our listeners, where can people find more information on Iron Maiden, and why should they jump onto it? That's right now on Steam.
Well, if they just listen to you talking about it and me talking about it, hopefully they know why to jump on it. They can go to, like, Steam and, you know, search for Ion. It's not Iron, not the band.
Right.
I-O-N Maiden. Or they can go to 3DRealms.com, very simple, and read about it there. But, you know, I mean, this... You know, whether you come from the old school or you want to experience it for the first time, you know, I think this game's going to deliver.
Absolutely. Now, my final question is, can we expect this to be brought over to, like, Xbox One, the Nintendo Switch, PS4 in the near future?
We have every intention of doing that.
Awesome. Scott, thank you so much for joining me here on B3. Iron Maiden in Early Access, would you say? Early Access?
Yes, it's on Early Access right now.
Early Access right now. I look forward to the full game sometime later in 2018. Scott, thank you so much for everything that 3D Realms has done for me, from a kid to right now in the very present.
Thanks so much for saying so.
mystery unfolds in a brand new title called Disco Elysium. And I'm here with Alexander, who is in charge with the majority of the art of this game. Welcome to Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
I'm good. There's been a lot of people playing our game, and the reaction has been fantastic. It's really rewarding seeing all the bright, smiling faces as the people are laughing at our hilarious game.
I was actually talking to Mick beforehand, and he was talking about how we had one person demoing the game for 3 hours straight. I mean, that shows how, like, engulfed, like, these players are with a title like Disco Elysium.
Yeah, I mean, they like sit down, they'll think, yeah, I'll play this thing for 5 minutes, and then the next thing they know, it's been like 3 hours. And but also, we have had like people just like come back to have like another 3 hour session just to pick like a different archetype and see like the different. So the game is an RPG. It's like a skill based system that like feeds into the dialogues and stuff, and depending on your build, you can like see very different results and play the game in a very different way. So like people come back with a different archetype at the beginning of the game and see like different choices, different consequences, like all of the variations that are possible in the game.
Very cool. So tell us a little bit about the main character of this game, someone who kind of has lost his memory. He's trying to figure out who he is while he's trying to solve this murder, this lynching that occurred.
Yeah, so this is our sort of a postmodern take on the amnesia narrative. In a way, like, we feel after our game, nobody can ever make an amnesia narrative ever again in a video game. But you wake up in a trashed-up motel room with an absolutely nuclear hangover, and you have no idea what has happened before. Last night was complete and total self-annihilation. Your memory is completely wiped, and then it's like, it's all right, so you pick up your stuff, you gather your stuff, it's like, you start your day and you find out that you're a police officer. The responsibilities come bearing down on you. But also, besides the case that you're here to solve, a man has been hung in a tree. He's been hanging there for 7 weeks now. It's getting really bad. You gotta get that corpse down and solve the case. But also besides that, you also have to find out who you are. Well, like, what drove you to this point, this like low point in your life? What happened? And also, from this point forward, make the decisions who you will become. Will this be the point where... will this turn into a redemption story for you, or will you just like really lean in on the nastiness and be the most brutal, most disgusting human being you can ever be?
Because there's also the external fight that's happening, trying to find this mystery, but then there's this internal fight where he's legit asking himself like philosophical questions, not just about like literally finding out who he is, but metaphorically finding out who he is and what kind of person he legit truly has become.
This kind of ties into our like skill system. So when traditionally role-playing games have these stats that are kind of like vague representations of your archetype, you have your strength and dexterity and stuff. But for us, our skill system allows you to build like very specific personalities. So depending on your build, you get like different skills talking to you, interjecting their like ideas and suggestions into dialogue. So you might be like talking with someone and interrogating a suspect, for instance. And if you're a smart guy, your logic might like interject and be like, "Hey, man, this like this story doesn't quite add up. Maybe you should ask him about it." But also, if maybe you have like a high empathy skill, then empathy might chime in that, "No, there's probably like a reason for this. Like, there's like just kind of sense that there's a reason for this. So don't maybe push him on it." So with the different ways that your skills reveal information or give you suggestions, like give you new dialogue options, and also like present the player with like choices on who, like which side of your psyche do you trust and where do you go with that.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I'm just hypnotized by the art style. Like before I was diving into there, I noticed that you were creating a little promo picture with our protagonist there, and I thought that the style of art that you've chosen for this game just looks simply incredible. It's like it almost looks like a beautiful wet canvas of sorts.
Yeah, that's our 1-2 punch where we grab you with the art and then like glue you down with the writing. My own background is in oil painting, and like the other artists on the team also have like classical oil painting background, so we're like trying to really take all of these very tactile oil paint media techniques and aesthetics and like bring this into video games to make something like completely unique and new that's never been like really done in video games before.
And I kind of like the whole choose your own adventure kind of aspect that you have with the dialogue. I mean, some of it can lead to a dead end, some of it could lead to other questions and like inner thoughts. It's really cool how you presented this troubled protagonist of sorts.
Yeah, like the narrative structure in this game and like where it can lead you. The lead writer of our project is a published novelist, so there's some like literary heft in there. We've actually translated. The book is now also translated, but it's not been like published yet. But like when we're releasing the game, a book that's like also set in the same fictional universe should also come out like soonish. But also like the world building behind this game is like this immense huge project. It's been going on for like 15 or 20 years. We were playing tabletop sessions set in the same universe when we were like in high school, basically.
Oh, cool.
And also like the systems that we have. So there's like two schools of thought in role-playing world. There's the like miniature great battle dudes who are in it for like the combat systems and stuff, and there's like the groups of friends who like gather and almost don't even use dice and just like role play and like riff off of each other's like sense of humor and have fun that way. And this like our game Disco Elysium is very much in the latter school of thought, where like it's very much about the creative whirlwind that happens when like clever people have fun together.
Yeah, it has a lot of really great dark humor that I've seen thus far in this game. I'm very much looking forward to diving deeper and trying to figure out who this guy is and what kind of person he has become and if he will actually redeem himself. So I guess my final question is, when it comes time, why should people dive into Disco Elysium?
Because it's the next great RPG. And this is going to sound arrogant and cocky.
I won't lie, I've never really played an RPG like this before. That it's super cool.
This is the next great RPG. It's going to be defining a zeitgeist, and people are going to be stealing mechanics from this game.
Well, Alexander, thank you so much for joining me here on Boston Bastard Game. Disco Elysium coming to PC very soon. Is there any news on maybe a console release in the near future?
We're looking into it, but can't really say anything about that yet.
Understandable. Well, Alexander, thank you so much for joining me on my podcast show, and best of luck with the rest of PAX East.
All right, thank you.
Jackalin, jackals, jackaliac, this is home of the brave, hail some fatty out of cat, Jack wanna celebrate, Jack wanna big drink, driving drops in at a bar, call a rinky-dink, Jack pushes through the door, and he crosses the floor, tips his hat to a man, grinning in the corner, going to the
PAX East doesn't seem to be PAX East without talking to my good buddy and old fellow classmate, Gregory Nunez, representing Nerds Clothing, Nobody Ever Respects Dork Society. Welcome back to Boston Bass Brigade. How are you doing today?
You always have the best intros, Evan, I swear to God. But, PAX has been good. It started off rocky because we're in a new location and our booth kind of shrunk a little bit, not our choice. But, you know, we're making it work, especially for the people that are looking for us. At least they have the chance to find us.
Now, as I mentioned, we've been talking, for the past couple of years about Nerds Clothing. How have you felt Nerds has evolved since the last couple of years?
It's actually evolved really well. We started off last year with the licensing deal with WWE, and that's blossomed. We made a few appearances in the WWE 2K18 with, I think, one or two of the shirts. And they're making their way onto stage, everything. So as you can see, we have a lot of characters, and a lot have sold, especially with WrestleMania being this weekend.
Absolutely. And you're actually showing off a preview of some new shirts that you're working on. What were you calling it, like the neon style?
Well, we started off as Undisputed, but we haven't really came up with an exact name, so we're more focused on the style, because Undisputed is something that's coming through, that it's a group in NXT that, you know, that we can't use. Pretty much, like, that name is already covering something. So, the style is taking the legendary wrestlers and kind of giving it more of a modern feel. I feel, and also Eric feels, is the wrestling shirts now just kind of resemble like tap out shirts, or like you expect the dragon to come out of somebody's, like, you know, underwear or whatever, you know.
Right.
With no pun intended. But so we try to give it more of a modern look, more of like a 90s Fresh Prince type of like graffiti art around it, and then, you know, so even if somebody who's not a huge fan of wrestling can still wear it to school and feel like they completed their outfit.
Now, I don't know if you can share too much, but what does North's clothing have planned for the next few months? Do you have new designs that you are planning to showcase?
Yeah, so we have a two-tone jacket with splatter sleeves that we're supposed to make the show this week. We have struck a deal with Chalkline, but just the shipping just didn't work out to our favor, so it's coming on Monday after the show, but they will be posted on the website. That's one of the new designs. We also have short sleeve hoodies. We have some parody shirts that resemble like the Yeezy line that has all the cities from cartoons, anime, and TV shows in like the nerd world. So,
which, by the way, I think that might be a first that you and Eric got to autograph one of those shirts.
Yeah, like usually it's one or the other. Like I autographed a sneaker last year. He autographed a few like boxes and stuff. But first time that somebody asked for both of ours on shoulder on like the shoulder blades of each side of the shirt, so that was pretty cool.
Well, who knows, you guys could be like the next Rockefeller.
Only if I can only quit my day job and just do this all the time, it'll be phenomenal.
Alright, so awesome. I know you talked about the WWE. I know that they have just announced the return of XFL. Would Nerds Clothing be up for doing something regarding that?
That would be up to our licensing company, and we would see what we can do. It has to work for both parties. But we're still really in our early stages, so I'm not bougie enough to say I would not do a deal with this person, I would not do a deal with that person. But I might make it there one day, but it's just not now. You know, it just has to work out best for the Nerds Clothing and best for the other party, so that way it can be a long-lasting relationship.
Absolutely. So I guess maybe my final question, for those who are just getting into Nerds Clothing, what would you say is the best thing that they should buy as their first form of apparel?
I would always go with like our logo. We have two different ones. We have like a running dorser, and then we have like the skull and crossbones logo. But instead of bones, it's pencils. You know, I think that really represents our company. We do kind of parody stuff, kind of like our own designs or whatever, but I think that one really holds with everything. You find that patch, you find that logo on pretty much everything that we do. So I feel like you go with the basic first and then branch out to whatever it is you like. You like Sonic, we got something for that. You like Mario, we got something for that. You know, we have a little bit of everything.
Awesome. Greg, thank you as always for being on my show. Check out Nerds Clothing wherever apparel is sold, whether it be online. And seriously, dude, you got to get Super Saiyan Triple H on a t-shirt, man.
Hey, if we can get him going Super Saiyan, spitting the water up in the air, that would be amazing. So we'll work with that and see. Make sure we can get the license for it, and there'll be no problems around that, and then we'll go from there.
Make sure there's like a dead Yamcha in the background, too.
I mean, Yamcha's always, yeah, you know, judging from Super, we might have to put a dead Frieza, even though I'm saying it, Frieza was the MVP. Yeah. How many people did he save? How many times did he come through? He even tried to take out Urim by himself, and even though he knew that he didn't have enough power to do so. So I got to give it a freezer. That's MVP right now.
All right. I think I got to bring that up to my buddy Elite 4, Derek, because he's the big DBS super expert. So I'll see what he has to say about that on the next episode of Wicked Anime. But Greg, thank you as always, man. And hope you get some rest soon.
I'm going to nap underneath the desk again for the second time today.
Folks, once again, I am so excited. I am in a Nintendo booth, and I'm with probably one of my absolute favorite game directors. He is showing off Travis Strikes Again, No More Heroes, which, by the way, No More Heroes was the game that got me to buy a Wii. Mr. Goichi Suda, welcome to B3. How are you doing today?
Hello! I'm Sub 51.
First of all, I just played the demo. It was an absolute blast. It's great seeing Travis touch down again. So, where did the concept of bringing Travis come from? Like, why now? Why is it now the return of Travis?
So the biggest reason was when he first saw the Switch hardware, he had this instinct come to him, and he's like, okay, this is it. This is where I have to bring Travis back.
Very nice. So I recall last year you were doing a thing on NIS America, and you were talking about bringing in, probably talking to other game developers, and bringing that into the realm of No More Heroes. Is this where Travis Strikes Again became the child, as it were, of this creation?
まず第一段階というか今回はTシャツのコラボがメインなんですけども、そこからスタートして、なんていうかな、もっと面白いことができるといいなっていう、ビデオゲームの世界でなんか新しいチャレンジができるといいなと思って、やってます。
Yeah, this is just the first step in that plan. So in this game, Travis's t-shirts will feature different indie games on them. And he's hoping to go forward with this and take it even further, maybe even create a new genre between collaborations with indie games.
Right, because I remember you were talking with the creator of Danganronpa and how about you wanted Monokuma probably featured as a boss in this game. Is this one of the things that you're hoping will happen? Maybe not in this game, but maybe in a future one?
There will be a lot of legal hoops to jump through to make that possible, but if it ever happens, then he'd love to do it.
Danganronpa 3が 多分ね完結してしまったので、シリーズが終わってしまったから、やっていいのかどうかもちょっとまだね。
The other problem is that Danganronpa 3 kind of ended the series, so he's not sure that if it's okay to do that anymore.
Well, you never know. Monokuma could just show up anywhere.
モノクマだし、もういつ現れてもおかしくない。いや、なるほど、OK。
So, how is Travis Strikes Again a little different from past No More Heroes games?
とにかく新しいスタイルを作りたいなと思ってて、No More Heroes の 1、2 っていうのは、ある意味スタイルが出来上がってるんですよね。なので、ナンバリングになってしまうと、同じスタイルを作んなきゃいけない。だけど、今回僕ら新しいスタイルでゲームを作りたかったので、本当ブランニュータイトルとして、新 IP として、 まあなのであの遊びもちょっと違ったりとかもちろんスラッシュアクションは気持ちいいんですけどもそうではないいろんな仕組みを仕組みと仕掛けを作りたくてそうですね全く違うものにしたかったんです。Yeah,
so basically they wanted to go in a totally new direction with this and make a totally different kind of game. With No More Heroes 1 and 2, it kind of set the formula for the series. So they took off the number and gave this a whole new title, and it's kind of like a new IP. And they're going to experiment with a lot of different genres in this game, a lot of different play styles.
So basically, this is a type of, I won't say sequel, but it's sort of the kind of game where even if you've never played at a No More Heroes game, you can just easily jump right into it.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
so younger gamers who aren't familiar with the No More Heroes series, they can just jump right into this one.
And what's great too is that you've still captured the original humor of No More Heroes. That was probably one of my favorite aspects of No More Heroes, besides the gameplay, of course. So, what were some of the challenges of balancing the comedy and the action aspect of Travis Strikes Again?
Well, I kind of feel like I'm a joke myself, so I always try to synchronize myself with Travis in order to get the comedy to come out. And whenever I'm writing the script, it just naturally comes out like that.
You're very talented.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Now, okay, my second to last question. Why will Travis Strikes Again be the most badass video game on the Nintendo Switch?
とにかく今日見てもらっても分かると思うんですけども、やっぱり DSL のようなゲームがなかなか存在しない、いろんな意味で目立ってるゲームになっているんじゃないかなっていうのを今回パックスでも確信したので、はい、そこを期待してほしいと思います。
Well, as you can see if you look around the Nintendo booth, TSA really stands out a lot in a lot of ways, so I really he really feels that it's a unique, super unique game, and hopefully the users will understand that as well.
So okay, my final question for you is that I've got a bit of a gut instinct happening right now, and that gut instinct is telling me thatThis isn't the last time we're going to see Travis Touchdown in a Nintendo Switch game this year. Is my gut instinct correct?
Yeah. Well, if such a thing happens, it'll be interesting. But somehow, if the media and the people support it, it'll be nice to happen. Yeah. I can't say anything about it right now.
Yeah, you can't really say anything about it right now, but it'd be great if Travis appeared somewhere else, but it's up to the media. They have to spread the word and really push Travis to get him into something else.
And Suda, I will do my absolute best to push him out into the media.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Travis Strikes Again, coming out 2018?
Yeah, this year.
This year. Awesome. On the Nintendo Switch. Suda, thank you once again for joining me here. And I just got to say one last thing, and it's that I could have listened to you and the creator Danganronpa talk for hours in that NIS interview last year.
Wow. Yeah.
Thank you once again.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Here at the Juggler Games booth with Jakub, who is showing off their latest title, My Memory of Us. Welcome to B3. How are you doing today?
Hello, how are you doing?
So tell us a little bit about Juggler Games. How were you guys founded?
Okay, so we are like a very small studio from Poland, from Warsaw. But the studio is quite fresh. We are working on our first title, My Memory of Us, which is an adventure game about friendship between two children during very dark times and about survival. But the studio is small and fresh, but people are not fresh because we work in industry for more than 30 years together. So yeah, we know how to make games.
Very cool. So you're showing off this game, My Memory of Us. I just played the demo of it. It looks like it's going to be a very beautiful story, and it's about the two friends growing up in World War II. But before it dives into that, it's revealed that this is actually being told to a kid in the present day.
Yeah. The idea is that the game refers to the story of Holocaust, but we don't want to offend anyone, and we decided to make a fairy tale about it. And also we decided not to use symbols, nations, and we try to minimize the violence as we can. It's not told about the war, it's about friendship.
Yes.
The war itself is just like a background. The game is about developing friendship, about survival, about cooperation between two friends, and you actually can keep the second character hand, and the story is about boy and girl. She's stronger, she's faster, she can run, she can use the slingshot, she's a bit a naughty type. And the boy, he do the stealth stuff, so he alone, he can stealth, he can sneak, he can hide, but when he holds her hand, they can do it together.
Okay.
And when you change the pair leader, they can run together, because the girl is stronger and she grabs the boy and they can run faster. And of course there's a story, the game is heavily based on storytelling, so we have cinematics, we have a very nice voiceover which is still in production. And I guarantee that you are going to cry at the end of the game, but we are not kidding the main characters.
Well, good. Okay, so that's probably the best thing about this game. I mean, what's nice about it too is that My Memory of Us is, as you put it while I was showing the demo, it's a game that anyone from ages 5 to anyone like ages 80 can jump in and enjoy because it's teaching a very valuable lesson.
Yeah. We are not historians, we are not politicians, so we don't want to teach you history, but actually, history can be taught from this game. If you're interested, the game will contain very tiny encyclopedia which you will have to unlock, and you can read about about some characters. For example, on this poster, right in the left corner, we can see a guy with a group of children. This is a real guy. He was a true hero. He was Janusz Kolczak. He was a Jewish and Polish hero. He was like super famous teacher who was living an orphanage in a ghetto. And he decided that he will go to concentration camp with his children, even though he could be saved. So we have such guys in our game, a few of them. And you can meet them, you can do some quests for these guys.
Okay.
And this is our tribute to them, because for us we are like superheroes. But we won't say you their names inside the game. It's up to you if you will discover it or not.
Right, so if you want to just enjoy the game, you can. But if you really want to dive deep into what this whole title is about, you have that option.
Because we have to, we try as much as we can to respect two groups of people. Survivors and victims of the Holocaust, and gamers too. So our game is entertainment, but we try to make it very polite, beautiful, charming, and not like controversial. It's not a cheap game.
Right, pretty. Yeah, you wanted to make sure that it's fun, but you do want to still like teach something about this atrocity that happened in world history.
But it's up to the gamer if he wants to get it or not. So. We won't shoot with history to the people, yeah?
Yeah, and I can understand that. So, I'm looking at all these sorts of, like, I look at the characters, which are great. You got some really nice symbolism with, like, the whales and the robots and all that. Was there any sort of challenge that you found when you were trying to, you know, tell this sort of story without being too much about the actual history of it?
Yeah, it's pretty hard, but most of games show them, like, most important mechanics during beginning of the game, and our game evolves. So, for example, characters are changing the color during the game, because the color in our game is like it plays the role of interaction. It shows that something is interactive, but it also shows that something is in danger, and it's like a symbol of exclusion. Because on all of the art, we see a girl in a red dress, which is the tribute to the girl in a red dress from the Schindler's List.
Right.
So we try to use this color as a symbol to make it more powerful. I think that the most difficult part was to recreate the original story from the war times and make a fairy tale which is easy and to enjoy.
So for my listeners, if they want to find out more information on My Memory of Us, where can they find it?
They can find it on our Facebook account, on our Instagram, of course on mymemoryofus.com. You can subscribe, we can send you some cool info, and you can meet us on social media.
Jakub, thank you once again for joining me here on B3. My Memory of Us coming out later this year?
Yeah, the game is targeting quarter three of this year.
Okay.
It's going directly to... You can play it on PC, on PS4, on Xbox One too. And we are dreaming about another platform, but it's a top secret for now.
Okay, I can probably guess, but I will leave it up to the imagination of our listeners. Jakub, thank you once again, and best of luck with the rest of PAX East.
Thank you, guys.
Get a job, save your money, listen to Jane. Everybody knows umbrellas cost more in the rain. And all the news is bad.
I'm sitting in this beautiful conference room at the Residence Inn in Boston, Massachusetts, and I am being joined by game designer Kaito Sonaka and lead artist Naoto Abe, who I just played an amazingly fun game called SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy. Welcome to B3 Crew. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great.
Terrific. So, tell us a little bit about SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy, because I believe this is to celebrate something regarding the legacy of SNK.
SNK Heroines は、おかげさまで SNK の人気キャラクター、キャラクターに人気がとてもありまして、で、その中でも女性を集めた、ゲームを作ろうっていうところからきっかけで始まりました。
So yeah, one thing obvious about SNK is they've had their characters are very famous the world around, especially the female characters have always been very popular. So the concept was definitely to bring all of them together and create a game that celebrates their history.
So how did you decide upon which characters you wanted to feature in SNK Heroes? Like how did you decide which of the female characters like showcased the absolute best that SNK had to offer?
選別、そうですね。どう選別したか。一応KWF14 の後日談っていうところがあるので、KWF14 の中で、まあ、誰を出そうかっていうところから、ところで、選別をして、で他にもまあ新作なんで新しいキャラクターも入れなくちゃっていうところで誰を入れようかっていうので、選別していったって感じですかね。
So yeah, one of the things, there is a lot of KOF 14 characters, and that is because this is, it's a spin-off, but it, technically the story takes place after KOF 14, so they wanted to naturally move some of those characters over, but they also, since it is a new game, they wanted to bring back some old characters, and maybe even make some new characters, so a lot of discussions went down internally about that.
Okay, so you just mentioned that it is a spin-off of Kingdom Fighters 14, so how does this storyline in SNK Heroines fit with the recent storyline of Kingdom Fighters 14?
Well, 一応キャラクターに焦点を当てたゲームになってるんで、まあ、キャラクターの掛け合いとかを楽しんでもらおうかなっていうのを考えてるんですね。で、ただナコルとかが14で出てきたじゃないですか。っていうので時系列をきちっと作っとかないとナコルはどこの人なのみたいなことになってしまうんで、14の後日談だからナコルはもうみんなと知り合いだっていうところをに、物語を作っていくっていう感じになってまして、なんで14に直接的な関係があるっていうわけではなく、単純に後日談だけど直接的なストーリーのつながりはないっていう感じですかね。
So yeah, the story is not directly connected actually, it is more of justSo an example is Nakoruru. So her first KOF appearance was in 14.
Yes.
And they wanted to bring her into this game as well. But the story is not directly connected, but they wanted to make sure that the characters knew about her sort of thing, from 14 sort of thing. So they have a history, you know, they have, you know, back and forth conversations in the game, stuff like that. So it's not a direct story comparison, but it's just more like the events happen after 14 and they kind of all know each other and are friends or rivals or something like that.
Now, as this is also celebrating this year, the 40th anniversary of SNK, I'm curious to know if, you know, a game like SNK Heroines gave you the opportunity to pull out some of the more obscure characters from your company's long history and brought them into the fighting ring or the stage, as it were.
キャラクターに関してはちょっと情報出てないやつに関しては秘密ですけど、サプライズは用意してるっていう。
Yeah, so we still have a lot of character announcements going forward, so he can't really say that much about it, but he does still have some surprises in place for the fans.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to learning about those surprises when they are revealed.
Yeah, まあ、そういうのは楽しみですね。
So you and I, we just actually played a couple rounds together. You, of course, kicked my butt. I mean, you built the game. It felt natural that you did beat me. My question is then, with a game like this, what were some of the challenges of creating sort of a new fighting experience with SNK Heroines while at the same time keeping with the core traditions of SNK fighters?
まあ、コマンドを簡単にして間口を広げて、あんまり格闘ゲームをやってない人でも楽しめるように作ってる反面、まあ、アイテムとかゲージ管理のところでしっかりと楽しんでもらえるっていう風には作ってあります。
So yeah, I mean, the two, I guess, ethos for the game is to make the execution barrier much easier. As you can tell, there's just one button for special moves and stuff like that. So that is to just, you know, lower the barrier of entry. But they also added things like, as you can see, the gauge consumption and stuff is very, like, key critical to the game. So
yes.
Managing that plus the items makes it a little bit more strategic than other fighting games. So it's, he thinks that we succeeded in creating a game that both... You know, newcomers and veterans can both get into.
Right, and as Judith was mentioning earlier, there was this nice blend of like the classic King of Fighters with Super Smash Brothers 2, and thankfully that helped to build something like a really cool and even possibly unique experience in the fighting game realm that I think a lot of people have been clamoring for.
Thank you.
Now, I know the game is going to be released sometime in the fall. You still have some big secrets that you have yet to reveal about this title. But I'm curious to know, like, what is one of the biggest aspects of SNK Heroines that you're looking forward for the players to discover on their own?
そうですね。ストーリーモードで、まず、例えば、アテナとクーラを選んだときと、アテナとマイを選んだときで、 あのストーリーの内容自体は一緒なんですけど、掛け合いが変わって、なんで各キャラクター組み合わせによって掛け合いが変わるっていうところでストーリーモードを楽しんでもらえるかなって思ってるのと、あとカスタマイズモードでアクセサリーを付け替えたり、ポーズを変えたり、あと背景を変えたり、スタンプを貼ったりっていう、まあ、スクリーンショットを撮るための機能が結構充実してるんで、一人で遊んでても楽しいかなというふうに思ってます。
So yeah, there's two different things that he's really looking forward to seeing. One is the story mode. So the story mode is the same for every character, except basically the back and forth conversations will change depending on what the team is made up of. So if you have Nakoro and Mai, or Mai and Kula, then the conversations will be completely different.
Like what you do in King of Fighters 14.
そうですね。
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one other thing he is looking forward to seeing is there is a very like detailed customization mode. So you have costumes you can pick for each character, but you can also attach accessories to them and change the position. Mm-hmm. And from there you can change the pose, you can put a background, you can put stamps on it, and you can take lots of interesting screenshots. So he's looking forward to a lot of stuff from that.
Very cool. So I guess for my final question is, why should players who are either new to the SNK world or are fans of the SNK world, why should they dive into SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy when it's released to the world?
そうですね。ファンの方にとってしてみれば、一応キャラクターの、あの、掘り下げっていうのをやりたいなと思ってるんで、この2人が組み合わさったらこんな会話するんだっていうようなところで、まあ、設定とか物語を楽しんでもらいたいっていうのと、あと SNK のファン以外の人になってくると、まあ明らかで結構 SNK の認知度って上がってるとは思うんで、例えばまあスイッチ版で SNK を今まで知らなかった人でも SNK を知ってもらえるようになってきてるとは思うんで、まあ、そこで SNK の新作がスイッチに出た、やってみようって思ってもらえたらなと思ってる感じです。
So for veterans of SNK, you know, fans who have been there around for years, he thinks, you know, SK has always had a very rich lore, especially on KOF, between how the characters and stuff. So he wants to see them enjoy the interactions and stuff like that between these different characters. Some characters who might have never actually had interactions in the past. And for people who aren't really fans of SNK, he feels that, especially with things like the arcade archives on Switch and on PS4 and everything, a lot of people who might not know that much about SNK are starting to see their games, play their games, and... he thinks that this is a great time to put out a new title that's very unique for newcomers and veterans alike to, you know, kind of connect those two, like the history and the new stuff together. So,
terrific. So, Naka-san, Abe-san, arigatou gozaimasu. SNK Heroines Tag Team Frenzy is coming this fall to PlayStation 4 and Nintendo Switch. I am very much looking forward to seeing what you're going to be showcasing in the full game, and just from what I played today, I can already see it being a mainstay in many of the big fighting tournaments, especially in a place like Evo. Nice little private booth at the Frostkeep area, and I'm here with David Talley, who is showing me off this beautiful looking game called Rend. Welcome to B3, how are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you.
So tell me a little bit about Frostkeep.
Well, Frostkeep is a very small indie studio in California. It was formed by three guys who were part of the original World of Warcraft team.
Oh, wow.
And we're working on Rend, our very first title, for launch later this year.
So can you tell us a little bit about the world of Rend? Like, what are players going to expect when they first dive into it?
Rend is a fantasy sandbox survival game. Unlike other survival games, it's a team-based survival game. So when you join a server, you'll choose one of three factions. And in joining that faction, you'll have a bunch of friends already on the server, hopefully, that you know you might not already know. And there's also a win condition. So for your faction, you're trying to win on the server, which is also unlike other survival games.
Now, when you're traversing through this world of Rend, like, what are some of the things that you're going to be able to do besides the combat aspect?
There's all kinds of things. There's lots of crafting, there's lots of skill progressions, There's all kinds of harvesting you can do out in the world.
As you said, there are going to be three factions in the game, and the object of the game is that within 2 months, you have to be the surviving faction. So how are players going to have to find their way to be that one surviving faction?
So there are actually these things out in the world that we're calling spirits, that everything you do in the game, like if you chop down a tree, a spirit might pop out, or if you kill a creature, a spirit might pop out. And you will actually collect that onto your person, into your inventory, and you know, other players can kill you and take your spirits. And you will take those spirits back to your faction base, and there's a tree at the center of your faction base that you kind of deposit those spirits into. And there's a maximum limit of spirits that you're trying to deposit in your faction base, indicated by a progress bar that's on a giant tree in the center of the map. And as soon as your faction hits the top of that progress bar, you basically win.
Now, as you mentioned, this is a fantasy game. It's a beautiful game, but I'm curious as to where some of this inspiration came from and how you turned those inspirations into something new and unique for game players.
Well, it might be a better question for our artists. I'm an engineer, but it's Norse-inspired. A lot of us are kind of big into Norse mythology, and we also feel it. It's been underused. There aren't a lot of, like, I guess, Norse-based games out there. And that kind of allows us to go for a more stylized approach to our art. We don't need realism, which at the same time kind of allows us to make a game that runs on all kinds of computers but still looks good.
Yes.
Right? It's got this very artistic quality to it as opposed to more realistic games, which might not age well or might not run that well. So.
Now, you did just say it's not about the realism, but there are some survival aspects to this game. So what are some things that players are going to have to keep tabs on in order to actually survive in the world of Rent?
So like most other survival games, you've got hunger and thirst, so you need to, you know, harvest berries or melons or whatever out in the world, or you can kill creatures and harvest their meat. You're also, you need water, so you can, you know, run up to a lake or something and drink directly from it. You've got encumbrance, so everything that you're carrying on your person has a weight to it, and you can only carry so much, and so you kind of need to manage your weight and make sure you don't pick too many berries or cut off too many branches or whatever of trees so you can actually make it back to base and deposit those resources. There's also temperature, so you got to watch out for hot and cold environments, and you have to make sure that, you know, if you're going into somewhere that's freezing, you're wearing enough armor or enough warm clothes in order to not freeze to death there.
So we did a touch on that in the demo. I think it's pretty cool.
Yep. So
when it comes time to actually fight the other factions, like, what are players expected to, you know, do in order to actually be the victorious ones?
So the game is actually a third-person shooter at heart. We've got all your typical first-person shooter weapons, only in, you know, fantasy form. So we've got bows, we've got crossbows and repeaters and shard blasters, which are kind of like shotguns. So, you know, your typical first-person shooter or third-person shooter skills are going to come into play. You need to aim. You can get headshots, you can critically hit players that way. And so in that vein, it's kind of what players are used to in shooters, just in a survival game.
Now, besides all that aspect, there are like four different ways that you can upgrade your stats. Can you dive into a little bit of to what kind of people or what kind of warriors you can actually evolve into?
Sure. So we have a talent system. We kind of call them archetypes, and there are four different archetypes that you can play. There's an assassin, a soldier, a survivalist, and a mystic, and each of them kind of give you various ways to augment however you might like to play the game. So like an assassin is a stealthy shooter type, a soldier is a in-your-face tank, a survivalist can survive out in the world easier, he's less hungry, and a mystic has all kinds of magic abilities that he can, help his other buddies with or help himself out with.
Now, on top of that, you can also craft various weapons and items, but I want to ask you personally, what's your most favorite weapon that is featured in Rend that you can craft?
Our shard blasters are really fun. I mean, I really like shotguns in games in general, and so our shard blaster looks really cool, and we actually had a really funny bug at one point when you would kill a creature with a shard blaster, it would actually apply physics to it, so if you'd shoot it, and it would just fly off into the horizon.
Actually, that sounds pretty cool. You should probably keep that in there.
Yeah, maybe.
So you are expecting, hopefully, to launch the early access in 2018 for your PC, and you're already talking about maybe, hopefully, expanding it towards consoles.
Yep. So we're in a Friends and Family Alpha right now. We'll be doing a public alpha in the next few weeks that you can sign up on our website at rengame.com. And we'll be launching into early access later this year. We'll get the game into a good state on PC, and then we will definitely launch it on console eventually.
So I guess my final question is, for our listeners out there, why should they play Rend?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people have played survival games and had bad experiences where they, you know, spawn in a random part of the map and get killed by a tiny snake immediately. Or just get jumped by a few random people on the server. And so we're putting a huge focus on new player experience. And so we want to ease players into the survival experience and, I guess, kind of give them a leg up over other survival games.
David, thank you so much for joining me here on B3. Rend coming later this year, 2018. Where can more people find information on the game?
Rendgame.com.
Excellent. David, thank you once again, and I hope you have a great PAX East.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Now, I am now an instrument of violence. I am a vessel of imitability. I cannot leave this undecided. Stepping down to battle another day. Remember me for all time. This determination is a vital part of me. Surrender. Now we'll be counted with the endless masses that I will defeat.
Coming to you from the Devolver Digital booth, I'm here with Sam Robinson from 1-Bit Beyond, who just showed me off his latest title, The Swords of Ditto. Welcome to Boston Ambassador Brigade.
Oh, thank you so much.
How are you doing today?
I'm having a brilliant time. Just started the show, and you're the first guy to come by and play the game, actually. Yeah, it went well. There was no crashes, so it's good.
That's terrific. So tell us a little bit about 1-Bit Beyond.
This is our first game, actually. We've formed like 3 years ago. We are kind of X-Curve Studio developers. We made Stealth Inc., Stealth Inc. 2 before, Fluidity Spin Cycle in America, that's the American name. We have a kind of experience making Nintendo-style action puzzle games. Nintendo of Japan actually published a game of ours before we made it with Nintendo of Japan.
Oh, really?
That was Fluidity Spin Cycle on 3DS. It was a sequel to Fluidity on Wii U. So we knew a lot about like Nintendo kind of mechanics, and we wanted to make a new game that brought like Nintendo mechanics to other platforms, basically. Yeah.
The other platforms
were lacking that, you know?
Pretty much. And hence, that's why you came up with The Swords of Ditto.
Yeah.
Which is a roguelike style game. Once you die, you have to sleep through a century, bring out new characters. It's a really, really complicated and complex storyline you got there. So tell us a little bit about the storyline of The Swords of Ditto.
So basically, at the beginning of the game, you wash up on this island. And the island is called Ditto. It's the island of Ditto. And it's called Ditto because it has this kind of cyclical nature of, it's repetition. Because of the curse on the island, basically there's a witch on the island. She awakens every 100 years and she wants to rule over the place. So every 100 years a sword is chosen, that's the kind of hero. A hero is chosen to vanquish Mormo and save the island. But if they fail, because it's a roguelike, if they fail, the island actually plunges further into darkness. So there's actually like a consequence to failure and a kind of persistence to the story. It's not like it's a roguelike where you die and you just start a new game. The game actually just carries on. Yeah.
Okay. So even if you die, you can still continue on with the story, but it's different characters?
You get every time you start a new game. I keep saying new game, but it's kind of weird. It's a new game, but it's kind of carrying on from the last.
Right.
You failed. You start the new game, and the gravestone of the last hero will be somewhere, and you have to go and find that grave to get the sword again. Mm-hmm. Sorry, what was the question again?
We were talking about the storyline of the game.
Okay. So, that's the story. You have to vanquish this evil witch, and there's a curse on the island that you have to break, basically.
Yeah.
I don't want to give too much away, because there's lots of story hidden in the dialogue of the game, all the NPCs. Like, it's up to the player to go around and get clues about how to defeat Mormo. But that's a simple version of the story.
Pretty much. And what's neat about the game is that no two gameplays are exactly going to be the same, because everything changes all throughout the stuff.
Yes, it's procedurally generated, so every time you play, the adventure is different. I mean, that's the idea. Is we want to make a roguelike kind of Zelda-inspired action RPG that changes every time. So every time you play, you get a different adventure. Yeah.
Fantastic. So what's nice about the game, too, is that it's co-op, so you and a friend can play with this together.
Yes, yes. That's something we wanted to do. Yeah, I mean, we just look at a lot of co-op games, and they're all very kind of bleak, post-apocalyptic, and we wanted to put something out there where two people could play it, yeah.
Something more fantastical.
Yeah, yeah, and very joyful to be in. It's a good universe that we wanted. That from the beginning, we wanted to make a good universe, like a place that you're happy to be in all the time.
Yeah. Even if it gets darker, there's still a little bit of whimsy.
Whimsical. It's very cute. Even like the evil is cute in the
game. Yeah, that's what I know. It's like the main boss. You kind of want a plushie of them already.
Yeah, yeah. And you want. I mean, when we started, it was way too whimsical. It was way too happy. Yeah, there were lots of food, like jokes in there, like all the gadgets, all the toys were like pizzas. You threw a pizza, or you had a sausage string, and we even had the Pie Force at one point. Like it was like a take on the Triforce.
So what changed?
Well, it was too happy, and it was like there was no feeling of consequence to what you were doing, you know. So we wanted to make people feel like. We want to make them care about the world and make them care about the characters.
Because if you die, you bring the world deeper into darkness.
Yes, everything gets worse. The buildings start falling apart. The NPCs start getting a little bit more miserable. They start kind of resenting you because you're not succeeding in your quest, you know?
Pretty much.
So you start caring about the world, yeah. That's the idea.
So how vast of a world is this that you have crafted?
It's kind of hard to quantify because it's random.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I have not been able to play every single version of the world, but it's pretty vast, yeah. I'm trying to think of a way of quantifying it for you, like in terms of hours, you were thinking, or...
Well, I know we talked about this a little bit. It's like you can basically complete the main story mode 15-20 hours before you start seeing repeated things.
Yes.
I think it's really cool.
Well, you actually have to play through many playthroughs to actually see everything. Like, there's actually things locked off until you've failed a few times or you've won a few times. There's an XP system in the game that carries over every time you die, so you continuously level up as you play. I mean, it's all random. Like, the world is randomly... The map is random.
Yeah.
And then the rooms that go into the map are random. The towns are random. The dungeons are random. Even the puzzles in the dungeons kind of get randomly stitched together. So sometimes even I'll go into it as the level designer. Sorry, I'm moving around.
Don't worry about it.
And I'll go into a puzzle and I wouldn't have seen that variation before. I know it works because I've made it using a kind of complex set of rules, but even I can get flummoxed a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's neat too is even after this game is released, you're actually going to be adding more things to it.
Yes, we're very keen to keep updating it because it's just pulling from a pool of levels and maps and modifiers. We can just keep adding modifiers, keep adding levels, keep adding worlds if we can go that far. I mean, it depends on the success of the game and the feedback as well. Like, we're going to be watching what people think want from the game in future, yeah.
Very nice. So I guess my final question is, why should people check out the Swords of Ditto?
Because it's like nothing else around, you know. You know, there's been recently a kind of like a debate about violence in video games. Like, it just keeps coming back. Like,
yeah.
Trump brought it back. This is the perfect game for the times. You know, it's nothing negative really about it. It's very joyful to be in. And it's cross-generational as well. Like, we were looking at game TV shows like Adventure Time and that kind of thing as influence, and we liked the way that it's a kids' show technically, but a lot of adults watch Adventure Time. You know,
you can
get an entertainment from it as an adult, and we wanted to make something cross-generational like that that appeals to kids, or even adults. You know, any age, both genders or all genders, I'd say.
Yes.
So yeah, it's got mass appeal, I think, to a lot of different people.
Sam, it's looking fantastic. I can't wait to personally dive into the full version of it. The Swords of Ditto, coming out on Steam and PS4. Any other consoles?
That's it. No, PS4. It's a PS4 exclusive, and it's coming on Steam for PC, Mac, and Linux on the 24th of April.
Fantastic. Sam, thank you once again, and best of luck throughout the rest of the PAX East.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It may be tough, but you'll never knock him down. He's a towering god, but not a sacred cow. He may be caught, but never on the ropes.
I'm joined here with Ian from another indie. Welcome to Boston Bastard Brigade.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Dude, what was this madness that we just watched here?
So we just watched somebody actually defeat all three Cine bosses that we have in this build. It's only happened three times in the whole event. It was good, right?
Yeah! Tell me a little bit about this game, because this is the first time I'm actually seeing it here.
Yeah, so Cine is a boss battler inspired by the Souls series. It is seven boss fights that you can fight in any order that you choose, with a final eighth boss once you complete those seven. However, in Cine, you do not get stronger as you play in the game, you get weaker.
Oh, okay, so whatever you have left is what you're going to use for the other bosses. You don't get more health, it's just what you've got.
Yep, 100% correct. You lose stats, you lose items, you lose equipment, you lose everything, man. You lose it all by the end.
Dude, like, I'll be blunt, man. I can picture tournaments just surrounding who can complete this in the quickest time possible.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see speedrunners getting in on this. I think speedrunners are going to really get into Cine.
So when does this game come out for people?
Soon. I can't do better than that right now because we're in the middle of searching it for consoles. As soon as that's done, I'll be able to do a release date. But it's happening.
Awesome. Now let's move on to a game that I personally, one of my personal favorites of PAX East so far, Yuppie Psycho.
Yeah, Yuppie Psycho. So, Yuppie Psycho is a first day, first job horror game. It's all about this gentleman here, Brian Pasternak, taking a job in a company that he knows he's underqualified for, but he's so excited with the offer, he signs the contract without even reading it, really.
Yeah.
What happens next is he becomes Sintra's witch hunter. Didn't even know witches were real until now, and he's now a hunter of them. It's all about office life. It's all about living life in this weird, cursed office in an attempt to basically free the people and fix the problem. It's scary, it's funny, it's interesting, it's weird.
One of the other games that I really compare it to is Corpse Party, because like in Corpse Party, you have no way to fend off attacks. All you can do is run and hide.
Yeah. If you're being attacked, get away from it. It's not an easy game, but it's more puzzle-oriented, adventure-oriented. There's no real combat. You are, after all, a 17-year-old with a briefcase. It's really tough. But it's really good, it's really interesting, it's super exciting.
And what's neat too is a guy that I really know is Garode is doing the music for this video game, who actually did the music for Valhalla.
Yeah, Michael Kelly, amazing artist, and dude, it just makes me so happy to be able to say that he's working on the game.
Yeah, it is super awesome. I can't wait for that to come out. You're saying hopefully by the end of the year.
By the end of the year, yeah. We can't really say much more than that right now. We're still very much in development. And then once we finish that, we've got to do all the polish, we've got to do all the porting. But we're hopefully launching on everything. So, you know, it'll be worth the wait.
Awesome. And the next game that I actually got to try out was one called Shots Fired.
Yeah, my baby. Shots Fired's my baby.
Oh, it's your baby.
Yeah, Shots Fired is like the game that I met the developers in the Philippines. And like that's the game that I think another indie really, really, really helped more than any other. Like I we did a lot with those guys, and we have a great relationship with them, and they're amazing. I love them so much. It's
awesome. So tell us a little bit about the story, because you're calling it a first-person assassination sort of game.
Yeah, it's a first-person assassination simulator, or FPS for short. I thought that was really clever when I came up with it. Yeah, it is a parody. It's a satire game. It lampoons our obsession with revenge. So in the beginning of the game, the main character's wife is murdered and their daughter is stolen. Kidnapped, and their TV is stolen. And you go on a mission of vengeance, reclaiming, essentially. It's just funny. Like, it's all about taking the mickey out of things like John Wick and Taken and all the other hundreds of movies that are based around this.
I think it's the first time I've actually seen a character text their own death.
Yeah, text their own death, and also respond only in emojis.
Yeah, that too. Now, this game looks really cool. You're hoping also this by the end of the year, right?
Yeah. We're hoping by, like, maybe middle of the year.
All right, so those are the games that I became experienced with. What else does another indie have to offer?
So we're also showing Nairi. which is a absolutely gorgeous Japanese and Dutch developed visual novel slash adventure game. It's kind of like, in many ways, Nairi is like the exact opposite of the games that we just discussed. It's really beautiful, sweet. It's a story of adventure and a young girl overcoming trials and tribulations, but it's very uplifting. It's very child friendly, which many of our games are not. So it's really nice to have that variety. I call it our palate cleanser.
Yeah.
You know, like when you're tired of all the death and the carnage and the violence, like Nairi is just, it's a sweet story about a girl's adventure. There's a beautiful animal companions, and you know, it's just lovely. It's a great
right.
game.
So like for our hardcore anime fans, it's like going from something like Devil May Crybaby to something more sweeter like Nanan Biori. I don't know if you have any rough idea of what those are. And what's the other game that you're showing off right over here,
too?
This
is Le Grand Legacy. So Le Grand Legacy is our Indonesian-developed JRPG.
So an IRPG.
Or IJRPG. We haven't quite figured it out yet. But yeah, it's inspired by games like Dragoon, Suikoden. Basically, 90s RPGs that aren't Final Fantasy.
Right. So tell us a little bit about the story behind this one.
Yeah, so this is a story of a slave who realizes that he is more than what he appears, and goes on a quest to save the world from itself and from invading forces. So there's some Game of Thrones style, like internal politics, as well as a threat from beyond.
Ian, this sounds really awesome. So for our listeners, where can they find more information on Another Indie?
So we've got a website, anotherindie.com, but that feels kind of old school these days. Best place to be is Discord. So discord.gg/AI.
Ian, thank you so much for joining me here on Boston Mastergate. And, dude, congrats on the success that you've been showcasing here. I see, Yuffie Psycho and Sinner, looks like our good buddies from Marooners Rocks actually gave you some awards.
Yeah. We're winning awards all over the place, and we've got some great shout-outs. Sinner also won at GDC, Best in Play, and man, it's just been great to get the feedback from the fans.
Absolutely. And Ian, thank you once again for chatting with me. Thank you for showing me all these games, and I hope after PAX East is over, you can get a nice, big, long rest.
Oh, I'm not going to get to do that, because I've got Rez in the UK.
We were just talking about Rez there.
Yeah.
But try to have as much fun as you can.
I will do what I can. Tomorrow, I will be sleeping late.